Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. We're continuing our conversation with Margaret Young, professor of English and Literature at BYU. As I mentioned last time, Margaret wrote a play depicting the life of Jane Manning James. She was working with a large, well-known Utah company when, well, I'll let her tell the rest of the story. The company she was working with
had planned a really big advertising campaign and had put out $20,000 to film these stories that would be played sometime during conference. And all of a sudden it was pulled. And we had all of the footage, but it was not going to air. We were never given a solid reason. Our sense was that people were uncomfortable with the fact that we were, just by the nature of what we were writing about, bringing up that very difficult issue of the priesthood restriction. Cool. So that was pulled. I was given rights to the footage. I worked with Scott Freebairn, who had filmed everything, and we cobbled everything together to make a little documentary. But that came as a result of something that didn't happen.
Very interesting. I know this can be touchy. One of the things that I've discovered personally is it seems like it's a more touchy subject for white people than it is for black people. White people are very happy to talk about this, but
A lot of black people don't find out about it until they're on missions. That was the case with Darren Smith, who no longer participates in LDS type things, which is sad because we could certainly use his voice. Some of the African missionaries who I know happened to be in an apartment where Doctrines of Salvation, the book by Joseph Fielding Smith, was. And they read his ideas, which were all speculations and not true. And one of the African missionaries was deeply upset to find that, according to Joseph Fielding Smith, he had been less valiant in the pre-existence and was cursed because of Cain. And Elder Holland went to dedicate Cameroon and areas around there, and all of these missionaries were there to talk with Elder Holland, and they opened up for questions, and this African missionary had his white companion ask Elder Holland about this fence-sitter idea, the curse of Cain. And I heard back, because I was writing to about 20 of these missionaries, I heard back from a bunch of them telling me how agitated Elder Holland became in saying, that is not true. I wish nobody had said anything on that issue, but that is not true. And of course, at this point, we now have the official race essay, which disavows the whole idea of curse of Cain, valiancy in the pre-existence, and that is not a public affairs thing. That went through all of the hierarchy. They were aware of it. They knew it was going to be coming out. It was quite a process, a two-year process for the person who wrote that. And it wasn't me. and I think generally they prefer that his... And at this point, we really wouldn't say he wrote it. We would say he was among the writers because it went through committees. And some would say, well, we can't have this and we can't have that. So ultimately, it's a product of people meeting together and saying, what do we say? But the fact that it does not say we don't know why the restriction existed is actually really big. We do know why, because of the culture of the day. Everybody believed in the curse of Cain back then. That came in the 1400s with slavery. How do we justify taking humans into bondage? Even, you know, if it's tribal violence that brings them into a place where we can then take them into bondage, how do we justify that? Well, look, God said, you know, that Canaan through Ham was cursed to toil and bear water for his brothers, and that came because Ham was a descendant of Cain through his wife. A whole lot of far-reaching to justify the unjustifiable.
I really do think that whites are much more defensive about this, and maybe we have, you know, we have reason to be.
Well, I because I'm 61 years old, I grew up with the priesthood revelation. I was 23. And I was living in Mexico when it was lifted. And that was a day of great joy. But I was raised with appalling ideas. Thankfully, I had particularly my father, who is my example in so many ways. I'm really continuing his work in everything I do. But my father would react strongly when anybody would say something ugly against blacks, and it happened a lot. And when my seminary teacher said something really ugly, I went to my dad, and my dad was upset. He was deeply upset. And that let me know that it was okay, that it wasn't, that what I felt when my seminary teacher used the N-word, or when he said terribly, just awful things about blacks, that it was okay to know, this is wrong. These are his ideas, and they're wrong. And then to go all the way up to 78, have the restriction lifted, but that certainly wasn't enough. It lifted the restriction, but it didn't disavow anything. And then to go through the time when President Hinckley in 2006, I believe, in the general priesthood session, said beautiful words. How can any man holding the Melchizedek priesthood arrogantly assume that he is eligible for that priesthood, whereas another, whose skin may be of a different color, but who lives a righteous life, is ineligible? And that was sort of the great preparation for the race essay that came about in Gospel Topics. Philosophically, we are in a good place with what we believe and what we don't believe. Now we need to have our hearts go where the ideas have gone.
Wonderful world. I'll just add that I was pretty young. I was probably about 10 years old when the announcement came out. And I remember, I lived in New Hampshire at the time, and I remember thinking, blacks couldn't hold the priesthood? I didn't know that.
Well, and that was for many people. I was born in 55, but raised for a while in Indiana and in Chicago, Illinois. So I did see racism. I saw it in my fourth grade class, which I recognized what it was. You know, what nobody told me, do you realize that when your teacher is calling these three black boys, the only black boys in your class, up in front of the class and berating them that it's wrong and that she's doing it because she doesn't like the color of their skin? There was my heart, my intuition said, this is wrong. So I was introduced to racism because my father had taken us into many different cultures. And we had people in our home who had various amounts of melanin in their skin. So I was really prepared for everything that I did in the black history. Darius and I don't think we're quite finished yet. We don't know what is ahead. And much of my time in the future will be in Africa itself. And what a marvelous thing.
Thanks again for your time. Do you have any final words with regards to what we can learn about the story of Jane Manning James?
I want Jane's story to be certainly an example of how far we still need to come. If there are people who regard blacks as less than, their hearts must change. But Jane is an example of one who persevered through trials that we can hardly imagine, and did it through her relationship with God, and praised God throughout.
We hope you enjoyed listening to Margaret's personal experience regarding the often touchy subject of race. It turns out we aren't the only ones that had a hard time talking about the race problem. In our next podcast, we'll talk to University of Utah history professor Paul Reeve, and he'll tell us some strange ideas people of the 19th century held.
It's physical, not just religious, in other words, right? And it's really by the 1840s that outsiders are referring to a Mormon race. And you have medical doctors who visit Utah Territory who suggest that there is a new race emerging out of the Great Basin.
These are some strange ideas.
They are very strange ideas.
It makes you wonder whether there are strange ideas that in 100 years people go, I can't believe they thought that.
Exactly.
We hope you'll come back and listen to Paul's fascinating discussion, and I'd like to invite you to support our work on Mormon history. Check out our website, gospeltangents.com, for some ways you can help us. While you're there, don't forget to purchase a transcript of this podcast, or you can get one at amazon.com for just $3. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll continue to support us at Gospel Tangents.